Now let's look at the role of social media in the Sydney siege and concerns about how it interfered with the police operation. Over the course of that 17-hour siege, the mainstream media agreed to police requests not to broadcast certain information, including videos of the hostages issuing their captors' demands and pleading for help. But police were powerless to restrict social networks, Facebook, Twitter and YouTube. So how do authorities deal with the power of social media, and what responsibilities do social media outlets have when it comes to such situations? Dr. Peter Chen is Media and Politics Lecturer at Sydney University, and he joins us in the breakfast studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Increasingly, we're seeing terrorist groups, fanatics and extremists using social media to spread their message. What are some of the reasons behind that? Because there was always a journalist interface in the past.
I think that the terrorist and small political organisations have always tended to be attracted to alternative media. If we think about the history of the kind of the recent period of terrorism since 9/11, we certainly saw Al-Qaeda use home video to create their messages and drop them directly to alternative media channels, particularly some of the Arab language channels, which would then get broadcast and then redistributed. So there is a tendency for people who want to get their message out there to gravitate towards alternative media. That's both in terms of what we might see as kind of negative groups like terrorist organisations, but also positive groups. So if we think about the protesters in the Tiananmen Square incident some decades ago now, they're heavy users of fax machines to communicate to the international media. And that was because the government in China had blocked access to mainstream media channels. So there is a tendency for groups that are marginalised or repressed in some way to obviously gravitate to these alternative and largely unregulated media channels. I think the other thing, of course, is particularly when we talk about terrorism, and that obviously, particularly given what the last interview said about this, might not really apply in this case, but particularly if we talk about terrorist organisations, they often actually map over social networks. They are sort of network-based organisations. They're not classically constructed organisations. And social media, if you think about it, maps over social networks. So there's a kind of dual logic there in the use of these
technologies. They're communicating with each other as well as with a public. And of course, ordinary Joe public out there reporting the things they've seen. They're taking photos and they're recording footage on their phones and they're posting it. You know, the command in New South Wales in that siege can ring news directors and ask them, as they did with Channel 7, to stop broadcasting what they could see from across their studios of the Lindt Cafe. Is it ever possible to censor or control social media in that way?
Not easily. I mean, the most sort of famous example of a government that has a very strong regulation of social media would be the Chinese government, and they've spent many, many years and incredible amounts of public resources investing in that, and even their capacity is limited. There is a kind of tension here. Clearly, mainstream media organisations want to be good citizens. They want to follow police directives. They don't want to exacerbate the event. But the public is voraciously interested in these breaking of events, and that's why we had the somewhat odd kind of situation where, you know, the ABC and a number of other news channels went to rolling coverage, even though for, you know, hours and hours nothing was happening.
But at the same time, you know, there were videos taken inside that cafe of the hostages. The hostages were being forced to post on Facebook, and we saw the situation where the mainstream media didn't broadcast those videos, but out they went on Facebook, out they went on other social media. Facebook as an HQ and an address, are they sufficiently accountable and able to turn off and make decisions in the moment in the same way that mainstream media organisations not only can, but have to do?
Well, the capacity is actually extremely limited. I mean, the great power of the social media is the incredible capacity to produce content by everybody who's part of that network. It's a bottom-up network.
So it's not like Facebook could do anything about it if you woke them up in the morning in Silicon Valley or wherever the heck they are and said, make it stop.
Certainly, they have more capacity than they like to claim. And one of the tensions, of course, is most of these companies are based in the United States. states where they operate, both culturally and legally in terms of their headquarters, under the American much more expansive free speech provisions.
And we have to remember what obligations should they have?
Well, I think that's a good debate. I mean, one of the difficulties, I think, is often in the immediate aftermath of an event like this, we see a lot of discussion about regulating these sorts of channels. So if we think about the riots in the United Kingdom, immediately after the riots in the United Kingdom, there was a proposal by the Prime Minister of the UK to regulate instant messaging, saying that had fed into the capacity of people to organise antisocial behaviour. That petered out pretty quickly because of the realisation that the capacity of the state, but also the capacity of the service operators, is incredibly limited. We do, I think, have a complex relationship with these kind of new media channels. They're incredibly intimate to us. I mean, most people utilise Facebook now. A large proportion of the population utilise Twitter. We have an intimate relation to them, and we tend to give them a bit of a free pass. So if we take Uber, for example, Uber's a bit of the darling of the mainstream
Uber?
Media.
What's Uber?
It's a ride-sharing application that people can use to get access to rides that they can then pay for.
Like a taxi, but
like
not
a taxi. Now, it is illegal in Australia to offer a taxi service unless you're a licensed taxi
But we
provider.
Somehow don't see that as illegal. We see it as a cool, groovy app you can put on your phone.
That's exactly right. So we tend to give these sort of new media startups a bit of a free pass.
Well, let me give people on social media a free pass by asking a mainstream media question. There was lots of criticism on social media of the mainstream media. Now, I'll put my hand on my heart and say, I think the mainstream media did a fine job, by and large, covering this siege. There you are. It's my personal opinion. Put in a complaint to the ABC. Channel 7 pulled down its footage. Videos weren't broadcast. Sure, wrong information went out. It was corrected as soon as it could be corrected and all the rest of it. What do you think of the way the mainstream media covered it? The one area we will come to in a moment is whether there was too much coverage, but just in terms of the coverage you saw.
Oh, no, I think it was actually very good coverage in general terms. I think we could identify individual statements, particularly early on, that were a bit egging the batter, but I think overall it was very good. Having said that, however, I think this
issue...
Come on,
be tough, Dr. Chen.
This issue did resolve itself very rapidly. And so the mainstream media wasn't tested in the way in which we've seen in other cases. So if we take, for example, the Boston bombing, there was an incredibly long period of time between the initial attacks and the actual identification and capture of the people who were responsible for that. In the aftermath of that, as that started to drag on, media, particularly the commercial media, which is in a competitive environment, felt free to speculate. More broadly. In this case, yes, I think the reporting was quite good. I don't know how that might have played out if this had dragged on for another week.
Okay. What about rolling coverage? Is there a debate to be had about rolling coverage on free-to-air, on ABC News 24 and on Sky? That copped a bit of flack. Was that overdone by both those organisations?
I think, you know, at the time, you don't know what's going to occur. The event could have resolved itself at any particular time. There were a number of times when people ran out of the venue that occurred. I think in retrospect, people can be critical. I have heard some churlish kind of views on this. It seems to me mostly a side to say with people who are disappointed they couldn't watch, you know, their normal shows.
Sure, sure. But there's a broader issue there, isn't there, about saying, well, are you, regardless of the motivations, there seems to be the terrorist flag being held up, or it wasn't actually, but that's was the message that apparently he was trying to send. That flag wasn't that. That you're in a way at risk of delivering the ends that the gunman wants if you keep broadcasting the vision the whole way through, notwithstanding the fact that someone might want to watch The Simpsons, you know?
Mm. I think, I mean, you know, that's always the argument about these sort of events. And clearly, in this case, you know, you have a disgruntled individual who wants to get visibility for,
Is that an argument for dialing down the rolling coverage?
This was an event that was occurring right in the middle of the largest city in Australia. I just don't think you can you can ignore that. I mean, there are a number of other sieges of a similar sort that have occurred, but they haven't occurred in the middle of the CBD. People were trapped in buildings and things like that. I mean, I think it's a debatable point, but in this case, it was an event that was occurring right in the middle of Australia's largest city. It had caused incredible disruption. In retrospect, maybe some of the coverage was excessive, but I don't think that I don't think we can really make that judgment. As we kind of see, I mean, I don't think that the amount of coverage has given this individual any benefit.
Yeah, right.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about, you know, a relatively sad and disgruntled individual, and the higher profile has simply proven what an unpleasant person he was, right?
Another, just very briefly, positive example, the Twitter hashtag, I'll ride with you, encouraging support for Muslims, particularly Muslim women travelling on public transport. Were you surprised by the speed that message got around and how it took on a life of its own, just briefly?
I was a little bit, but I think it's really interesting. And I think what it demonstrates, actually, is the flip side of the social media world. I mean, we're talking about the negatives about, you know, distributing misinformation and distributing these videos. The flip side, of course, is that if the public is, or parts of the public are concerned about a dominant negative representation of Muslim people in our community, and certainly we saw a number of very unpleasant events that followed the attacks in 9/11, which was pre-social media, we can certainly see how parts of the Australian community, I think, have come together following this incident in a way that might not have been visible.
Yes.
If we had
it gives
only
visibility
relied
to it. It gives visibility to that goodwill.
And certainly, I mean, there have been some criticisms of this campaign. Miranda Devine, for example, sort of, you know, says there's not enough attention to the victims. I think the victims are getting a lot of attention, and I don't think people's concern for the broader population, which I think this represents, is anyway a diminution of people's concern for the victims. But I think it is a way in which we can see that for good and also for ill at times, the new media and the social media environment has broken down the way in which the mainstream media dominate the discourse. And we saw that with alternative representations of the misogyny speech under Gillard.
Yeah,
we saw that with pushback against the way in which the march in March was covered earlier in the year. The media space is a more complex and contested space. It's contested by terrorists. It's also contested by the general public. That makes it less controllable, and there are problems there. But on the other hand, certainly we wouldn't have seen something like the I'll Ride With You campaign necessarily come out of the mainstreaming conventional media.
Thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us this morning.
Thanks for your time.
Dr. Peter Chen, media and politics lecturer at Sydney University.